I am here today with Philippe Lazzarini, resident and humanitarian coordinator of the United Nations in Somalia since April 2013. Philippe, thank you very much for being with us on the Global Observatory. Somalia was badly hit by a famine 2 years ago. How is the food security situation today?
Somalia has recovered from the famine, just to remind, had devastating impact on the population. I mean, for a period of almost 18 months, about 500,000 people died, half of them directly because of the famine, and half of them, many children and women, because we have the highest mortality rate of children under the age of 5 or highest maternal mortality rate in the sub-Saharan region. 2 years later, I would say, thanks to better crops and harvest, and also thanks to, I would say, a massive mobilization, we can say that the situation has improved. We have, for the first time in many years, less than 1 million persons in a state of emergency situation. The worrying news, I would say, is that we have an increased number of people teetering on the edge of food insecurity, which means 2.3 million people food insecure in the country.
So I understand that the humanitarian situation is better, yet it remains severe. Yet humanitarian operations are only 42% funded the last time I checked, I think, which was end of October 2013. So what does explain this reluctance by donors to fund humanitarian aid in Somalia? Is it linked in any ways with the fear of aid being diverted by some armed groups, especially groups like designated as terrorist entities like Al-Shabaab, which led in the past to, in 2009, I believe, to a dramatic drop in funding?
It is true that the cap this year is badly funded. We do have a cap for an appeal for the next coming 3 years. And basically, the strategy of the humanitarian community is, number one, provide life-saving assistance to the people in need, but number two, promote also longer-term solution and also build the capacity of the population to resist to the next shocks. This is what we are calling the resilience agenda. The current funding today allows the humanitarian primarily to focus on a life-saving operation, but hasn't really allowed the humanitarian community to build resilience. So this is one of the reasons why I do believe that the gain we have observed over the last 2 years still remain fragile, are reversible, and would there be a new severe shock, the population would not be prepared. So that's primarily the impact. Now, it is also true that there are some area in the country where providing assistance without presence or monitoring is more difficult, especially that we are not involved in the same scale of life-saving operation.
You mentioned the CAP, which stands for Consolidated Appeals Process, and which is the funding tool of the United Nations, the broader humanitarian community. For the first time ever, this CAP was launched for a 3-year period covering 2013 through 2015. I understand that this is meant to increase predictability of the response with the objective to strengthen indeed the longer-term resilience of the population. Can you tell us a bit more about the rationale behind this change from 1 year to a 3-year funding period?
As you said, the rationale is to say if we want to go beyond life-saving and if we want to build the capacity of the population to resist to further shock, we have to go beyond, I mean, a cycle of 12 months. And this is the reason why we have told to the international community that we will have a 3-year agenda, but the 3-year agenda we should allow us to promote a more durable solution. It is true when it comes to the resilience of people food insecure in country, but it is also the same for the internally displaced people. The consolidated appeal clearly stated it is time to promote durable solution for the displaced people in country. And you cannot promote durable solution in a cycle of 12 months. It is hence important that we break the way of doing traditional business and that we invest in the duration.
But at the same time, and in view of the UNDP compound bombing on June 19th of this year, and the subsequent and unrelated withdrawal of the International Medical Organization Médecins Sans Frontières in August, would you say that the security situation is conducive today to this kind of longer-term programming and the expansion of humanitarian aid in the country?
There is no doubt that the security situation remains challenging and that we are operating an environment which is not risk-free. That's the starting point, and that is also the reason why, while operating in a country like Somalia, we need to invest in security to allow partners to operate. I do believe that today we operate more in Mogadishu than we have ever done before. There are many other cities in the country where the humanitarian partners or development partners can operate. It is true, however, that the attack on June 19 has stalled the process of scaling up the United Nations presence in country and stalled the process of scaling up activities. Over the last few months, we have looked at enhancing the measure, and that's the reason why I'm confident that the agencies will again be able to beef up the program in favor of the Somali population in the coming few months.
When you say that we have to invest in security, do you mean that humanitarian actors have to invest in productive security measures or to better invest in ensuring acceptance of their activities in the field? Or are you referring to the broader environment and investing in security in Somalia as such?
I think the broader environment has been recently commented and debated at the Security Council, and the international community will certainly come out with a new resolution providing more resources to the AMISOM and to the Somali government. My point is more related to the humanitarian operation. We do need to improve the acceptance with the population. We do need to make local authorities more responsible to ensure that there is an environment conducive for the humanitarian partners. And all this will also be completed by a certain number of, I would say, passive protection or security measures the agencies will have to invest in.
When we talk about acceptance of humanitarian actors, we also talk about issues of perception by the communities in Somalia, by the armed groups who control some territory. In that respect, do you think that the relatively recent decision, resolution of the UN Security Council that instructed structural integration of the UN mission in Somalia, which means that you, as humanitarian coordinator, you will be the deputy of the political leadership of the mission. Do you think this will have an impact on issues of perception by armed groups, including Al-Shabaab, in the sense that you might be perceived as associated with a political force that might be viewed by some as partisan in this context?
We will need to remain extremely aware about the perception of the humanitarian partners vis-à-vis the Somali population. Now, the Security Council resolution you are referring to says also that when it comes to humanitarian assistance to the population, this assistance has to remain impartial, independent, and neutral. And I also do believe that when it comes to the humanitarian agenda, the humanitarian coordinator will not respond to a political office, but will continue to respond to the emergency response coordinator. So it is important to bear in mind that the humanitarian agenda will not be subordinated to political decision, especially if we want also to apply the letter and the spirit of the latest Security Council resolution.
Yet, as we are talking about issues of perception, do you have some margin of maneuver in that context of a structurally integrated mission? Do you have some margin of maneuver to take measures to distantiate the humanitarian community from the UN political mission in terms of a location of offices, for instance?
The humanitarian country team is not located with the mission temporary, yes, currently in Mogadishu, but this has been a temporary measure related to the 19 June attack in Mogadishu. But traditionally, UN agency funds and program will have separate compounds in Mogadishu, as it is the case in many other places in the country. So the short answer is yes. As humanitarian coordinator, I can sit with OCHA or any other agencies.
During the 2011 famine in Somalia, we saw a large response by actors who take no part to established humanitarian coordination mechanisms. I'm thinking in particular about some Muslim charities or aid coming from some Muslim countries, the coordination of which was handled in a quite ad hoc manner by the Organization of the Islamic Cooperation. And this coordination system, as back then, operated in parallel with the traditional UN-led coordination system. Are there still two separate coordination mechanisms in Somalia? And if yes, how is the dialogue going between these different actors?
I wouldn't say that there are two parallel coordination mechanisms. I mean, there are coordination mechanisms which are complementary. When it comes, for example, to a given sector, the health sector, the coordinator of this sector will have to be aware of what the overall needs are, what the current response is, and what is the remaining gap. That means a full awareness also of what these Islamic charities are doing in this given sector. So this coordination, which was very strong at the peak of the famine response, still continue in certain sector. And as an humanitarian coordinator, I remain also in close contact with the representative of the OIC, the Organization of the Islamic Council.
And is the OIC still playing also a role in coordinating some of these actors?
Not all the partners in country, less in country for the time being, but the OIC still continue to play this role in Somalia.
Well, Philippe, thank you very much for being with us today on the Global Observatory, and good luck.
Thank you very much.